Thank you so much for listening to this pre-recorded episode of Agent Chat Live. Agent Chat Live is a spinoff of Pub Talk Live. To find out more about both shows, go to pubtalk.live. Thank you so much to my Patreon podcast supporters, Brenda Drake, Jay Lynn, and Reframe. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Agent Chat Live. Hi, Jay. Hey, Laura. Hi, Lisa. Today, I have Claire Draper. Claire studied queer diversity and children's literature at New York University's Gallatin, I should have asked you how to pronounce that, School of Individualized Study, and while there, interned at Rare Bird Lit, Inkwell Management, and the Children's Book Council. After graduating, they spent a fantastic, if albeit short-lived, 2 weeks working as a bookseller for The Strand before ending up joining Inkwell Management as a receptionist and agent assistant in 2016. In early 2019, they moved to the Bent Agency to build their list with a collection of very queer books for kids of all ages, including graphic novels, picture books, middle grade, and young adult, as well as feminist and queer memoir, craft, how-to, DIY, and queer or otherwise diverse romance novels. So please welcome Claire. Hi.
Hi.
And you can find Claire's website and two websites in the description down below. So welcome to Agent Chat Live, Claire. So this is a spinoff of Pub Talk Live, which is like my publishing talk show. And my goal here is to kind of help potential clients get to know you a little bit better. So viewers are welcome to drop questions in the comments, but I do want to say starting off that we won't really be asking any questions like a Google search can answer. Things like word count, genre definition, stuff like that. And I also won't be asking anything like what I like to call pre-queries. When someone's like, would you be interested in, you know, mermaids in space is always my example.
Actually, I would be interested
in mermaids. That's what everyone says. Someone's got to write that. All right. So we're going to start with a little bit of a softball. So I mentioned it in your bio, but what categories and genres do you represent? What kind of stuff are you looking for right now?
Yeah, so kind of my bio sums it up really well. And if any of that changes, you can always find it on my website or the Bent Agency's website, or like those are kind of the two best places to look. But I'm really taking on pretty much everything in the kids space. I have a lot of picture books though, so I'm not taking on too many new picture books. Right now, I want to just sell the ones I already have. Seems a little backwards, I know, but graphic novels are a big thing for me. I have sold maybe 10 or so graphic novels in the past year plus, and I'm really excited about them. It's a medium that makes me really happy, and I think people are eager and always looking for new stuff. I also do YA and middle grade prose, both contemporary and genre. I used to say that I didn't do horror, thriller, suspense, but that just wasn't true. I just wanted it to be good. So, which I think is everyone's kind of baseline. So I realized that was a stupid thing to have as my do not sub to me. And especially after a querying person sent me a great, fantastic, like YA horror, paranormal horror, where the main character was gay. And I loved it so much that I took it on, and then I realized I couldn't say I didn't represent horror anymore. Because that just wasn't true. So, you know, things work out over the years as something is a no until it's a yes. But I really am big on children's books. I love YA, middle grade, picture books, graphic novels, prose, some nonfiction. But I'm not too big in the nonfiction space. And then I also represent some adult romance. I would love more craft and how-to books, but I just have gotten next to no submissions from them. Apparently, people are not as big crafters as I am. So I also represent some select memoir. It's pretty generally queer and feminist and like very, very like millennial-ish memoir, if that makes sense. Those are my categories. And, I tend not to do things in the adult space. Romance, I'm all gung-ho. I used to read romance in high school, like as early as high school. So like I've loved romance for a long time. But just other genres and normal adult literary fiction does not thrill me. Normal adult fiction doesn't thrill me. My partner earlier asked me to name a Stephen King book, and I think I named something that wasn't a Stephen King book. It was like in the horror genre, but it wasn't actually his. I just had credited him with it. So
Stephen King wrote all the horror ever.
So for me, I was like, oh, I the Stephen King book I like is his one about writing that's like the craft book. It's his memoir. But all the other books that he's written, I'm just not big on those. So and no discredit to his fantastic writing. I just am not a big adult reader.
Nice. Lodestar says he loves your hanging plants.
Oh, thank you. I have worked very hard on them. I try to hide new plants from her, so I just spread them out over the course of the house.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. So why did you get into agenting?
I actually credit the Twilight movies and my best friend, my high school best friend, Netta, with this. Twilight came out, and I was kind of going to see it. I don't know. But my best friend, high school best friend, insisted that I go to see Twilight. And I loved it so much and was so crazy for it. I then went and read all of the Twilight series in a matter of weeks. Then I was like, wait, that books are good. Books are good and I can read them. I had before then like read books.
And how old were you?
Reading them. I had 13, 14.
Okay.
I had enjoyed reading, but like I never did it on my own. And then all of a sudden, I was reading fan fiction. I was writing fan fiction. I was reading books. I was like, I started not necessarily a book club, but like a secret book exchange where my friends and I would exchange romance novels and like YA books. But I fell in love with reading, and then I quickly learned that I wanted to be a part of that in some way. So I was going to be an English major. I was going to go write. I was going to start crafting books. And then I got to college and realized, not that I wasn't good at writing, I just wanted to be able to pay the bills. And in the meantime, I was going to go into publishing, a super wealthy endeavor. There is not money, especially in the early years of publishing. But I was like, I'll pay the bills by working in publishing and write on the side. And then I just kind of fell in love with writing. I fell in love with agenting. I worked in a number of different places, but I ended up on the agenting side and decided I liked the freedom to be able to work with whatever I want. Editors have to kind of are at the mercy of kind of their more senior staff, and also at the mercy of their imprint's taste. So if they are in an adult sci-fi imprint, they can't take on a children's middle grade book, right? So like I wanted the freedom to be able to do absolutely everything. And because I wanted to be able to do romance, graphic novels, YA middle grade picture books. I wanted to be able to do all of it. Memoir, I love a good like not celebrity memoir, but like a good like quasi-celebrity memoir, like a good influencer memoir. But I got into agenting kind of the normal way. I had internships starting at Rarebird Lit, which is a publishing house in LA, spent the summer with them, and I think they were like, it's a shame you can't stay on. We would love to hire you. And I was like, my parents already paid my tuition for my next semester of college. I have to actually go get my BA. So I finished college, kept interning, and then I worked at the Strand for 2 weeks, which was an incredibly fulfilling experience, getting to like put a book in someone's hands and knowing that they're likely going to read it, especially in the YA section where like they're like, I read this, what next? And then I was interviewing at places on my off days, so HarperCollins, like a whole bunch of places. And then I got an offer from a place I had interned in Quell Management, and I accepted kind of on the spot. I even had an interview at HarperCollins for their marketing department that afternoon, and I wrote an email saying, I will not be making it to this this interview. I've accepted a job. Thank you very much. That sort of thing. And I hope whoever that recruiter was is not at me for it. But I liked the idea of having an eclectic interest and being able to do what you wanted with the kind of work you wanted, and not ever being really told no. So then I spent some time at Inkwell, kind of did all of the jobs. I emptied the dishwasher. I read queries. I did everything. I answered the phones. If you called Inkwell from the years I was there, in the early years I was there, you heard my voice. That was me on the answering machine. And then I was assisting two different agents there who were both in the kids space. But one of them, Charlie Olson, he's phenomenal. But he had a list very similar to the list I wanted to build. And I didn't necessarily know that. I was like, how is it that I'm going to say, you author should work with me over Charlie? He has more experience than I do, but we essentially have the same taste. We love like diverse, fun graphic novels. So it was a hard sell to, in my head, to why people should work with me over him. Mm-hmm. Just because we had such similar visions, I think, for our lists. And I still think he has great taste, and I still buy all of his books. So I called up Jenny Bent at the Bent Agency, who had offered me a job kind of on the spot when I first started in publishing. I was like 6 months into working at Inkwell, and there was this like large event, the SCBWI like party that happens every year in January. That's like an awards night now, and I think it still kind of was then, but it was essentially a wine and cheese night. Like you pretty much just went to go eat and talk with people. And see some picture book illustrators, portfolios, but the majority of it was the potato bar and, getting to drink with friends. And so that night after the event ended, we were all hanging out in the bar afterwards. I met Jenny Bent, who is now my boss and the head of the Bent Agency. And she offered me a job pretty much on the spot. We talked for all of 5 minutes. I don't really even remember about what. But then she offered me a job in front of both of my bosses at the time. And so I just kind of took her card, remembered her name, and was like, I'm only 6 years into my job. I can't move already. So I worked for another couple of years, was deciding it was time to start building my list, and then came to the Bent Agency. And I was really excited about doing graphic novels and doing like pretty much just all queer graphic novels. If you've looked at any of my deal announcements of the past 6 months, 8 months, they're all pretty much like lesbian pirates or lesbians in space or lesbians on Earth and going to space. Like pretty much just all queer stuff across the board.
Lesbian mermaids in space.
Yeah, exactly. So I was really excited to build my list here. And we do a lot, the Bent Agency does a lot of children's books, does a lot of romance, but there was just an opportunity to kind of both learn, but also have my own niche.
Mm-hmm.
So, because there were people certainly doing graphic novels at the Bent Agency prior, but not necessarily their whole list.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and I'm at the Bent Agency and I love it. I love my colleagues and we do great stuff and I really enjoy it.
Nice.
That's the long answer.
Yeah, that's cool. All right. So this question has a little bit of a preface because I find if I ask it straight up, like people are too humble. So the preface is don't be humble.
Okay.
I'm purposely giving you a chance to brag about yourself. So take advantage of it.
Okay.
So if someone's thinking about querying you and your wish list lines up with their work, why would someone query you? Why should someone want to work with you?
Sure. Yeah. So, my wish list is largely queer stuff. Like if you're queer, if you're a person of color, if you're, if you have something that checks a box of a story that hasn't been heard before, I want to hear it. And I think other people want to hear it too. Why you would want to work with me is that I make myself available. We were talking prior to this call, I'm up in the evenings. So here, like me, 9, 10 o'clock at night, and you're just like, I'm stressing about my manuscript. And I see that my agent is tweeting. Text me. I have clients text me all the time saying, hey, this is going on. This is happening. Can we fix it? Even during normal business hours.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not so much that I don't have workplace boundaries. I do. There are important things going on. I push it for later. But I like to think that this is an open relationship and an open conversation. And I want you to be able to talk with me as kind of your eyes and ears and like your second brain, if you will. So I'm here as a resource. I'm here as advice. And there are plenty of people who are similar to me who I think there are a lot of good agents in publishing, especially now there are lots of like young, good, queer agents who would be a perfect fit for a lot of young queer people out there or old queer people out there who are trying to sell their work. And you don't have to be queer to query me. It just happens to be that that's a lot of my list. But I think there's, why me is just, I love your work and I want to work with it. Querying me is not all that, you're just going to fill out query manager. Like it's not all that taxing, though the stress of that is unparalleled. But I mean, when I get something that I love and I can't stop thinking about, I want to work with that person. And I've had people who I've had full on conversations with, I've offered them representation and they went with someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Especially who you went with is a good person. Like I'm not mad. And please do tell me when your book is on shelves so I can be the first in line to pre-order. I never have hard feelings about someone picking someone else. And I just think we're here to make good books and we should all kind of be in that together. That's a meandering way to say, like, work with me because I'm gonna be there for you and I'm gonna stand up for what your thoughts and feelings are and make sure your voice is heard and your story is heard. But also, let's make some fun books.
Cool. All right. We have the first question from Patreon supporter. So if you support my Patreon at $5 more a month, you can submit questions ahead of time for any of the guests. So this is from Lodestar, who's here tonight. I saw him commenting earlier. He's the one who liked your hanging plants.
Oh, yes.
on Instagram, I saw you posted a pic of a playbill. What is your favorite musical or play?
Oh, that's a tough one. All of my friends are musical theater people. I like in college had my like close friend group from college that we're all still friends now, like 8 or so people were all musical theater kids. Like, they were all actors. I don't really know how I ended up being the only one who wasn't an actor in that group. But I am not as musically versed as some other people. But I really like Sweeney Todd. I really like Fiddler on the Roof. My dad is a big fan of Fiddler on the Roof. So one of my like earliest memories of a musical is watching that with him. And I know they're not really musicals, but I love Disney movies. And so like Jingle Jangle that just premiered, that like that musical movie. So perfect. So great. I wish the sound balance was off. It felt like I was watching the BBC, but it beautiful production. And like, I love it when I'm watching something and someone starts singing and they're just so moved by emotion that they have to sing. Mm-hmm. I think that's such an interesting medium. Those two favorite musicals, but I also have a lot of favorite plays as well. So like Waiting for Godot, is one of my favorite plays, but yeah.
All right. So the next question is a little bit heavier. A lot of times when this question is asked, it's asked kind of in the vein of like, if you had a magic wand and you could change one thing about the publishing industry, what would it be? Which is fun, but also like, I guess I'm a pragmatist, you know, like I'm a realist. So I'm like, if, you know, realistically, let's say you were like the CEO of like Penguin Random House or whatever, and you had the ability to make a big change, what do you think you would change about the publishing industry?
I think in some ways it's already happening. I would let publishing be remote. I mean, we are remote right now because of COVID, and I really hope that doesn't change, because I think realistically publishing has been so white, so heterosexual, so able-bodied for so long, because publishing is largely based in New York or London, but we're so localized in such an expensive city. And we're kind of elitist. I would really love if we could up salaries across the board. They're starting to do it, but like an entry level position in New York City at any company, like any person who has a bachelor's degree goes to apply in any job in New York City, they would laugh at $45,000 a year. Mm-hmm. We're excited in publishing that we finally reached $45,000 a year. So for me, I would really love if we could pay people their worth. I know that's not realistic because publishing is that much money. Like there aren't that many wealthy authors. So, but I think, you know, people in publishing don't just work 9 to 5. They work 9 to 5, they get home, and then they go read for 4 more hours. Mm-hmm. So I wish we could pay people their worth, but also diversify publishing. I think this is said more beautifully and said more often by people much smarter than me and who have been like credited in the industry as doing kind of this work of diversifying publishing. But I've thought for a while that we needed to pay people a living wage and we need to let them live wherever they want. Like my first job in publishing paid like $31,000 when I started. Like if I didn't have my parents helping me out, I was not going to be able to afford my rent or food. Like no way. That wasn't realistic. Like I had back problems. How was I supposed to pay for my huge copay for my physical therapy appointments how was I supposed to eat and pay the bills? Like, anyways, this is a whole thing. Capitalism is bad, but, and I think anyone in any industry, whether you're flipping burgers or the CEO of a company, you need to be paid a living wage. But I think that would change a significant number of problems if we, A, listened to our younger staff in publishing and paid them a living wage and let them work where they want to work. If someone is based in Arizona, that shouldn't encumber them from working at Penguin Random House just because they're not in the right location. Like, there might be someone perfect in the middle of Iowa who has great things to say and has a great editorial eye or is a marketing genius, but they're based somewhere that isn't realistic. So anyways, that is my magic wand poof change. Yeah. That I would like to make happen. Though, of course, diversity doesn't happen overnight. Those changes don't happen overnight. And I think there are lots of people in publishing, especially people of color and women of color, queers of color, who are saying important things about how they're not listened to by management and publishing. So I think it's important to, like, listen to them in all of this process. But, like, we need more of them. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's see where, okay. I got lost in my notes. All right. Let's do the quick round. So, I just have like 5 questions, that I want you to answer in like, let's say 7 seconds or less. Yeah.
Got it.
Like, so the first one actually has a little bit of a story to it. So when I was first kind of coming up with this series idea, I couldn't figure out what to name it. I've never titled anything in my life. Like, I think my publicist or my editor has titled every book I've ever published. And I had asked kind of the Patreon people, the Patreon supporters, you know, what I should call the show. And Lodestar had suggested, I think it was Lodestar, Snack Time with an Agent. Which I really liked because I just thought it was fun. And I thought it was like, it indicated kind of the casual, like chatty nature. Mm-hmm. But I was also concerned that people would think it's only for like kidlet people.
Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah. So this question, the first question, the quick round is, came from that basically. So the question is, what is your favorite snack?
My favorite snack is chips and guac. Not out of a stupid package at the grocery store. I mean, like homemade, fresh avocados, lime juice, tomato, red onion, like seasoning salt, like seasoning of any kind, salt really, is my favorite snack. And especially if they're my partner hates this. Especially if they're the lime Tostitos chips. I love them super limey. Both my guac and my chips. So. Mm. Yeah, guacamole and chips would be my favorite snack. Nice.
What is your preferred caffeine source?
Oh, I'm not crazy big on caffeine, but coffee and tea are close. Tea is sometimes easier though because I have acid reflux and coffee does make it weak.
So there's the regulars, especially on Wednesdays. There's like this ongoing war on coffee versus tea. I think they're really just trolling me because I don't drink tea. So, so the tea brigade is like strong. Is there a word that you irrationally hate?
Moist. I think it's like a gross, weird word. Like it can be used in like romance novels a lot, and it's not a sexy word. It's not a fun word. It's not, no, I hate the word moist. Yeah. Yeah, that's the word I hate.
Yeah. I think Jay is like the president of the tea brigade, so.
Well, to defend my tea side, my first experience with having tea was high tea. So like the full like 3-course meal of like the finger sandwiches and scones and like tart desserts. So like that is the way to do tea and get introduced to it. And I also started liking fruity stuff, and like super flavored teas. And now I have grown to like black tea, but I started with the sugar and fruit tea. So
okay, you said you like memoirs, so you might have a answer to this. What person do you most want to read a memoir from that you know of hasn't written one?
Oh, that I know hasn't written one. I mean, Carrie Fisher has written some of my most favorite memoirs. And especially the audiobooks are just so funny. Who hasn't written a memoir that I think? Has Nicole Byer written a memoir?
I don't know.
She would have a funny memoir.
All right,
she has
cool.
She has funny podcasts, but I feel like she would knock it out. Also, maybe Lizzo. But I know Lizzo can be pretty private, but I think she'd have an interesting memoir. Also, yeah. Janelle Monáe. That's a lot of answers, but yeah, those are my
answers. Because the last couple of people that were like, I don't know, I can't think of anyone. So you answered, you made up for it. That. All right. So last question, or last quick round question. Who's your favorite superhero?
Oh, Carol Danvers. Captain Marvel is a nice favorite, but it's almost a safe choice. And I really just, I watched Captain Marvel and I was like, her in that, it's really a Brie Larson thing, but her in that Nine Inch Nails like shirt, wearing the flannel and the leather jacket and riding off on the stolen motorcycle, that was just like a moment for me. But I like a lot of superheroes. Deadpool is funny. But I think like the one who I probably have read the most of is Wonder Woman. I love those comics. So those are my three answers. I know you asked for one.
All right. So let's talk about your kind of agenting process a little bit. I'm going to scroll back up because Tamara had asked a question, and Tamara had to go back to work, but she'll watch later. After a full request, what is your process in deciding if you want to rep or pass, offer rep or pass?
Yeah. So I like to read something, and I pretty much have to be caught up right away in it. In like first 10 pages, I pretty much have to not put it down the second I pick it up. Mm-hmm. Like I need all other work to be set aside. Like it needs to be so good that I'm just like, the world doesn't matter. This is the only thing that matters.
Mm-hmm.
And when it is that good, it's easy. It's easy as just saying, I really love your work. Let's call, make something happen.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a full manuscript. I have a lot of illustrators on my list, so I tend to just find them by reaching out to them. Mm-hmm. I cold email people and I'm like, hey, do you have an agent? All the time. For illustrators, and for some comics writers. But Once I request a full manuscript, I do take some time to read it. My reading list is really long right now. But once I read a couple pages, and if it's just so good, I don't put it down. I ignore the rest of my schedule for the day. And then you're hearing from me and I'm offering rep right away. I have been mad sometimes that I sat on a manuscript for like too long. And then all of a sudden I did get to it and I was like, gosh, I'm so mad I didn't read this earlier. This was sitting in my inbox the whole time. It's kind of like when you get an email update for a fan fiction you've been reading and all of a sudden you're like, you forget about it, whatever. And then you're like, all this time, this perfect chapter was sitting right here and I couldn't read it. So yeah, but I get disappointed in myself that I don't have a quicker pace when reading, but
gut decision, like you know.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah, like things sometimes need work, and I'm not afraid of doing work with an author. It's a pretty easy decision once I start reading to kind of get in the rhythm of something and offer rep.
Nice. So then if you sign a client, what can they expect after that? What does your process normally look like? And, you know, how does your communication go? That kind of stuff.
Yeah. So I like to do phone call conversations before I send an edit letter, because sometimes I've thought of something that is stupid and ridiculous and doesn't really work as a change to your book. So I like to have a conversation about even with the offer call about what edits I think we should make before going on submission. I like to do a decent, my agency is pretty editorial. I'm probably not even the most editorial. I know I'm not the most editorial person at my agency, but I like to do a round of edits or two, and then we go on submission. However long that takes. If you're quick at editing and that took a month or 2 weeks, or that takes 6 months, a year, I'm fine with that, whatever pace works for you. And then we go on submission. And sometimes submission takes is really short, and we have offers in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or a week even. And sometimes it can take 6-7 months, maybe longer. One of the first books I sold, I couldn't sell it as a YA novel, and I just sold it, it's not announced yet, I just sold it as a graphic novel instead to Dark Horse. And so, like, I don't really give up on projects. Once something kind of is in my head, I want to make it happen. But insofar as communication is concerned, I like to be pretty open, and I like easy conversation. A lot of my clients text me or Twitter DM me, Instagram messages, whatever it is. And we just keep open lines of communication going. I want my clients to feel like I'm reachable and I'm here to listen to their concerns. And it's an open process. I know different agents feel differently about this. As soon as we're on submission, I pretty freely share my submission list and my my pitch letter. I might change that as the years go on, but I like sharing it now because I think it provides some sense of comfort to know who it's with, and the authors themselves can stalk editors on Twitter and have hopes and dreams. Because I think the process can be a little daunting, and just not knowing who it's with and then getting passes can be annoying, and sad. So I like to share as much as I can.
All right. Cool. So Lodestar had also asked your wish list. Make sure to respect the rules of HEA and give me some good tropey-filled romance. So I know the answer to this, but his question is, what's HEA?
Happily Ever After. If you follow any romance novel writers, there's one I follow on TikTok, and she's like, she does really funny reactions. But HEA, I think it's also called something else, is Happily Ever After. So if you're writing a romance novel and they don't get together in the end, that's not a romance novel. That's a nice piece of fiction, but it's not a romance novel. If it's like, if there are kind of too many realistic struggles to get over, if they're like the romance should be passionate and it should be easy and should be like attainable. I could probably go on, but I'm big on, like, if you're writing in romance, unlike other categories that don't have as many rules, if you're writing romance, you really have to know and respect the rules of the genre, because otherwise you're not writing romance. You might be writing women's fiction, or you might be writing literary fiction, but you're not writing romance. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I wrote an article for Book Riot. And the title was, if it doesn't have an HEA or HFN, it's not romance.
I'm big on my happily ever afters. And that's, and because that is the one part of reading queries that is annoying, is because sometimes people don't follow the rules of the genre, specifically in romance. And then I get disappointed when they don't get together in the end. Mm. And I'm like, this isn't the rule. This is how this is supposed to work. If I read a romance novel, I want my happily ever after. I deserve my happily ever after.
Yeah.
I don't read adult fiction for this reason. I like happy endings.
Yeah.
So. That is my...
Yeah, I'm with you. All right. So it's funny because I actually didn't read romance and I wrote an article, a book, right about this as well, for a lot of different reasons. And then I became a publicist at Entangled, and I was mainly interested in working on their teen books. But at the time, that wasn't how they structured. Like, you just got assigned whatever book, right? And the first couple of books I got assigned were like contemporary romances. And I wanted to do a good job. I wanted to represent them well. So I read them and I fell in love with them. And that's how I started reading romance. So
romance is something I think people fall in love with. Like, I remember to this day, the look of disdain. I brought a romance novel to like a beach cookout that a family friend was hosting. And it was just all my brother's family, like all my brother's friends and their families. Mm. And we were, I guess, some other people, but there weren't kids my age there, because it was a Friday night. They were hanging out with their own friends. I was like, no, I'm going to read, and I'll read my book on the beach with my family and eat some hot dogs. It's totally good. But I remember the look of disdain on this family friend's face when, it, you know, because there's the naked man on the cover of the book, yeah, and stuff like that, of him looking at the book I was reading, and he's like, you can read better stuff than that. I'm like, mm-hmm, you don't read, so who's the person here? And I do also read, like, Shakespeare and,
yeah,
like, Beowulf, and I read other stuff. I just prefer romance novels.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Jay said, all genre romance are love stories, but not all love stories are genre romance.
Correct. Yeah, that's, I think, a great way to put that. The, like, not all squares are rectangles. All squares are rectangles, not all rectangles are squares. It's a great, yeah, way to put that. There are perfectly good love stories and perfectly good romantic storytellings that are not category romance. Mm-hmm. So, like, my biggest piece of advice to writers is to, like, study your genre, study your contemporaries. If you're saying there's nothing like this else out there, that shouldn't be the case. There should be other books similar enough to yours that there's an audience. So,
that is my all right. So, what is your single best query letter tip?
I often use some things from clients' queries in writing my pitches. And I think the best thing is to think of it like a pitch. And I like to, this is also a writing tip, is start with one line. Like, try and summarize your story into an elevator pitch of just one sentence. And if you can't do that, your story is too complicated. And like, you should actually be able to get into an elevator and tell someone what happens in your book before the doors open and they have to leave. In a reasonably sized elevator. Enough elevator. But the kind of point is that your query letter needs to have a strong base. So there should be kind of one line. I start with one line that summarizes kind of the big piece of the book, which is the main conflict and the main character. Main character, main conflict, and then build it from there. Make sure to always include like kind of the super typical things like a good bio, but I tend to ignore the introductions of like, I do read the introductions of like, I met you at a conference or something like that. But I really like pitches that just jump in and start telling me the story, that are like, in this 60,000 word YA story, that's really short for YA. Anyways, in this 80,000 word YA story, 16-year-old X named character gets stung by a bee in front of his crush and swells up like a balloon. And all of a sudden, his prom plans are ruined. Like, done, package it, there we go. Like, that is a whole story. And I don't need to know too much more. You got to set the stakes, set them high, and do it in a short amount of time. I think it's always so funny when people write query letters that are so long, it's longer than the sample you send in. That's not usually true, I'm exaggerating, but like, mm-hmm, be short to the point and set the stakes high.
It's okay. Hyperbole is my favorite literary device. So understatement is my second favorite. So it gets really interesting here.
Good contradiction.
All right. So here's a fun question, kind of a just for fun question. Do you have any good literary names for cats or dogs?
Good literary names for cats or dogs? Well, this is literary adjacent. My cat's name is Arthur, and he came with the name, the shelter named him that. But then when we got our second cat, my partner wanted to go with the theme of Arthurian legend and named her cat Morgana.
Nice.
After the witch who gives him the sword.
Uh-huh.
So I would like to have an entire Knights of the Round Table. That would be perfect. But dog or cat, that would be awesome. I also think that people who do Edgar Allan Poe kind of names are always so funny. Like it's dark and creepy, but it's a super happy dog. I always think those are hilarious. Arthur and Morgana are as literary as I've gotten. I did always think I was gonna one day name one of I was gonna have a ginger cat and I was gonna name it Crookshanks. but now that just kind of too obvious of a choice, and also J.K. Rowling and and also Fluffy, three-headed dog Fluffy. That's a great name for a dog. I would love to have a Great Dane and name it Fluffy. Great Danes also aren't fluffy, so that would just be funny.
Great Dane in a New York City apartment, though.
Not realistic.
My dog has a literary name. It's named after a book. My dog is named Jasper. Do you know where that's from?
That's not Twilight Jasper.
It is.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Also, great choice, because it's not the obvious one. You're like, oh, Jasper's an interesting name.
Yeah. I got him 12 years ago.
Perfect. Yeah, I am so glad I was not old enough to get tattoos when Twilight came out. I would have absolutely gotten my back covered, all of my body covered in stupid Twilight tattoos. So thank God for that. And they would have been bad too. They would have been poorly done. I have taste now. And I probably will still get a Twilight tattoo someday, maybe. But I would have gotten the Lion and the Lambs. I had for a long time, my passcode, my 4-digit passcode on my phone was Lamb.
Oh.
For a long time. That's too long.
Right. Jay said, I still think Catechus is an underrated name.
Oh, Catechus is good. Yeah, no, that is good. What would be some other good ones though?
I'm sure some of the punny ones, but I feel like I'm not clever enough to come up with them.
Well, and my problem would be I would have to, if I'm disciplining them and I have to yell a pun, it would just make me laugh. And then I want to be mad. When my cat bites my feet, I want to be mad that they're biting my feet. I don't want to be mad. I don't want to start laughing because I have a funny name. I'm dignified.
You're going to have a discipline alternate name.
Yeah.
Because none of us have a single name for our pet.
Oh, no. Morgana, my partner's cat Morgana is also Baby.
Mm-hmm.
Shadow. Arthur is pretty much just Arthur, but we used to have more names for him.
Yeah. So we had a question from the viewer. This is probably going to be the last question. What do you like to see in author, illustrator, graphic novel submissions?
I like to see a small number of pages of finished art. But I like to see a good idea. Graphic novels sell on submission, but I like to see that the story is thought out. Because sometimes with that sort of scenario, you might say, I have the idea figured out, it's mermaids in space, right? But I don't really know what the conflict is. I don't really know how the character struggles. I don't really know the character development, stuff like that. So I want to see that you fully envisioned kind of this world. So, and sometimes it's as simple as like a couple drawings and like a quick description can do that. Or something, sometimes it's a bit longer, but like, make sure you're, this is true of kind of everything, not just graphic novels. Make sure your conflict is really solid and how your character changes is solid. But other than that, I just like good art. Like, I like pretty things. If you can't see it right now, but I have like art here. If you ever saw my apartment, it's just covered in fan art. Like, I like Valkyrie is sitting right here. My partner's like Shiro from Voltron is right there. Like, I have a Jen Bartel thing right there. Catra is there. Like, we have fan art all over our apartment. I love graphic novels. My partner is so mad at me that I haven't caught up on all of the webtoons she's reading. But have good art and have a good story just to grip us. Graphic novels, like some of my favorite graphic novels are the ones that just carry me along with a good character. Beetle and the Hollow Bone, Snapdragon, are two of my favorites, and not mine, obviously, but I don't know why that's obvious, but to me, I'm like, oh, that I'm not their agent, so it's obvious. But both of those stories have like an interesting premise and a good character for us to just like love. Like, I want to root for the main character, even if they're a villain. Even if I'm following a villain, I want to root for them. I want to cheer for them. Make me fall in love. And good art. I like good art. Even if you do, this is something for me that will not be true for everyone else. If you do like fan casts of your characters, you do like, here are my OC characters, but I drew them as Catra and Adora from She-Ra. Like, I love that. Send that to me. I once was interested in a client who had, I didn't end up signing them, but I really loved that they had like a cool original Yu-Gi-Oh! Like short comic. Like completely fan, like fan, yeah, fan fiction Yu-Gi-Oh! Comic. So have something good and interesting to say and have fun art. Get me hooked. My client who are illustrators who send me like pictures of their characters, I'm like, oh yeah, this is my character now. This is my child now. I am very fierce about my clients' characters. So make me fall in love with yours.
Nice. All right. So that's pretty much all for tonight. Claire, thank you so much for coming on and chatting and answering everyone's questions. Thank you all for joining us tonight live. If you're watching the replay, thanks for that. And if you're listening on podcasts, I'm happy to have you however you're watching or listening. Yeah, so that's pretty much it. Everyone stay safe. Wash your hands. Oh, I did want to say Pub Talk Live on Saturday. I haven't put it up yet, but my guest co-host for next week is going to be JL, the author of Wings of Ebony. And my special guest is going to be Daphne, the founder of Illumicrate. So tune in on Saturday, next Saturday for that. And that's it. Everyone stay safe. Wash your hands. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.